Hello, Madison. Welcome to the Wisconsin Energy Broadcast, a show about clean tech, renewable energy, and the ways this rapidly growing industry is changing how we think about power. The Wisconsin Energy Broadcast is a project of the Perpetual Notion Machine. Now, here's your host, Heather Allen and Nan Fay.
Good evening and welcome to the Wisconsin Energy Broadcast. My name is Nan Fay and I'm here with my co-host Heather Allen. And our guests this evening are Ashray Manur and David Saloff. They're graduate students in the electrical engineering program at the University of Wisconsin. And they have a fascinating project called Energion, which we would like to explore with them this evening. And we'd like to start by asking them to explain its name.
So Energion is derived from two words, energy and gyan. So gyan is a Sanskrit word for knowledge. And the vision with our vision for this project is to promote energy education.
So welcome, gentlemen. This is a really exciting exciting opportunity to learn more about this really groundbreaking work that you're doing. Can we start out by having a description of what your product actually is?
So Energion is a platform for providing technical skills for students at various levels. So this can be at middle, high school, undergraduate, and graduate levels. And it provides hardware and software combined in a very intuitive and easy to use way. So we call this the hardware, we call it electricity grid in a box. So we have taken what a modern grid looks like today and possibly in the future and put it in a box that you can carry and play with. And we combine that with information and computing technologies and provide a programming interface so that you can write simple programs, maybe in Python, to know more about your energy system.
So it's a grid in a box. How big is the box?
It's about the size of a mini fridge or maybe a carry-on bag. We have wheels on it so you can roll it around. It's maybe 2 feet by 2 feet by 2 feet cube. And inside that box, there is everything that you would need to run a small-scale power grid. There are plugs so you can plug in your electric loads. There are plugs so you can plug in your sources like solar panels, wind turbines, batteries, and then there's the management inside. There's, as Ashray mentioned, there's a programmable computer that you can do a lot with to control all of these things.
Why did you make a grid in a box?
So our research at Wisconsin is in the area of microgrids. And what we thought about was there are two applications for this. There is the remote electrification in areas which lack electricity access. And there are also areas in the West, in United States, where there's an issue of energy resiliency. So these boxes are portable, and the power rating of this is sufficient for a small family. And the idea was that these boxes can be deployed easily and can solve these kind of issues that we just talked about. The second application that it serves is education. So the modern grid that we see today is changing, right? We're seeing integration of renewable energy sources. We're seeing it's becoming more distributed. It's becoming a network of distributed smaller power systems, which we call microgrids. The other interesting integration to this is the information and computing technologies, right? We're seeing cloud computing. We're seeing Internet of Things. And this is going to change the way we interact with the grid and manage the grid. So the modern power grid now needs a multidisciplinary approach to learn and innovate. And that's kind of the idea that we wanted to bring forward to the students and get a hands-on and get them to use this platform to get hands-on experience with energy.
So Go ahead there.
And this is something that we've seen in both of our undergraduate educations, that this field is developing so quickly that the curriculum can't quite keep up with all of the advances in the way that the grid is structured and all of the computing that you need to incorporate into the classical electrical engineering curriculum.
And so are you actually teaching classes using this product now?
So the way we started this was, so our main research, like I talked about, is in the area of microgrid management, right? So as the project started getting bigger, we wanted more students to be part of it. So then we realized that we had students who were really passionate about this, coming from electrical engineering, we had students coming from computer science, but they lacked the skills that was needed to push the project forward. So we had this box, so we started teaching electrical engineering students some basic concepts in computing technologies. We started teaching students in computer science and engineering some basic concepts about energy. And so that was our onboarding process for them of some sort. So we conducted these small tutorials, workshops, and so on, just for our internal team. But then we realized that this might be something which can be useful beyond our project. This can be useful for not only universities in the United States, but also globally. So we've deployed this platform at a partner university in India, where they're using this to teach a 2-credit course for mechanical and electrical engineering students.
It's just fascinating. And I want to go back to something you said a little bit earlier. You said that the box could supply a small family with the electricity it needs. Can you talk a little bit more about that?
Sure. So it comes in two versions, the hardware. You have the direct current version, the DC version, and we also have the alternating current AC version. So the DC version that we have now is a 12-volt system. And inside the box is a battery, actually two batteries. One battery supports the household loads, which can be maybe lights, fans, an entertainment system, even a mini fridge running on DC. And there's another battery which powers the electronics, right? And the electronics here that I'm talking about is the management system. So not only do you have a small power system, but you also have the management which can intelligently control your power system. So you can run simple energy applications to make sure that you have enough electricity or electrical energy to sustain you for a couple of days. And this is really useful for families which are in scenarios where they don't have access to the utility or they lose access to the utility at some point.
So you picture it being used in sort of emergency situations where there's a grid failure and a bunch of households are lacking power.
Yes.
And how are you hoping that they would use the solar panel that's on that box to generate power? Or do they need larger panels to generate enough power to support, say, a mini fridge or things like that?
So the good thing about this platform is that it's customizable, okay, not only on the software side, but also on the hardware side.
Okay.
So if you decide that your family needs a larger solar panel, you can integrate that easily. Or maybe you decide that you need a larger battery. So it's customizable in the hardware sense. Yeah.
So that's really interesting. So hypothetically, say you got a large sum of money that would help you do this and deploy in Puerto Rico. You could maybe have a box at each household to create a microgrid and then attach a few solar panels to increase the volume of electricity they could generate in their own household. Is that sort of how it would work?
Yes, exactly. Each household could become self-sufficient during these emergency situations. And it would kind of depend on the availability of solar panels if someone wanted to increase the capacity of generation. They could really add those on and become completely self-sufficient for normal operation, but the main idea would still be this emergency situations. Each home could support its own power, or you could have something like a community center that would have a larger scale setup of this type, and then people could come charge their batteries, charge their phones, or just come there and use the power to communicate with their family. Things like that are some of the main applications of this.
Sort of like a locally accessible power station where I can just go get some power, bring it back to my household, and I'm charged up for a day or two. That's a really innovative idea.
Yeah, it's fascinating. Is it user-friendly enough for ordinary people to use in these kinds of situations? How do you manage that?
So that's one of the advantages of making this completely programmable. So it can have a simple interface that we've developed. And an idea that we have is that students or anyone who has this platform can develop what we're calling apps, just like you would get for your smartphone, that people who know how to develop these things can develop some type of energy tool that anyone can deploy on their own box. And so we've been developing these apps to do simple things like managing batteries so that your battery will last a lot longer. You'll turn off loads that are less critical when the battery is getting low. That's one example of something that as a user, you could just download that app and run it on your box. You wouldn't have to think about any of the details, and you could have access to that. And the way that we've designed the platform makes it easy to develop these apps, much like the smartphone industry, that they have these app development tools. That's our vision, that we would see people developing these energy apps.
So, yeah, to add to what David said, so the Energion platform has two audiences here. The first audience is people who have interest in working with the energy system industry. So these might be students, researchers, or companies, right? So they would use the Energion platform to know more about the energy system, start designing and developing these energy applications that David talked about. So there's the second audience, which are the end users, which just want to buy this platform and deploy it in their homes, whether it's for lack of electricity access or for energy resiliency applications. And we hope that we can create an ecosystem where both these audiences come together. So there is the developer audience, which is building and designing these apps, and there's the user audience, which is downloading this app and using it in their Energion hardware platform.
And are these boxes out in the field being used now by individuals, or I'm just curious about whether they're available, what they cost, or what you imagine that might be when the product is sort of ready for the market, if it's not already?
So we don't have an exact number yet, but we think it's somewhere in between maybe $4,000 to $5,000. And this is this is a large box in the sense that it has features that might be suitable for a community center. So we are also thinking of building smaller size boxes which can go for a home. So we might have features which might not be needed for a home, but might be more suitable for a community center. So we are working on different tiers of boxes. Less expensive ones maybe for the homes, a slightly more expensive for a community center, and so on.
And to follow up on one of Nan's questions there are some, I think I recall you said there were some currently being used in that office building in India that you partnered with. Can you tell us about that?
Yeah, so what we've been doing is the management platform that we've built, we're also field testing it. So we have deployed these platforms in a partner university in India, where we're using this to manage an office building. So it has different energy resources like, you know, solar, a biodiesel generator, and it manages the existing loads in the office. And the idea is that the students there can work with the system to deploy these applications and can see how the energy system is reacting to what they're doing.
So tell us, how do you think the students, what are the reactions you get from students when they get to work with this box?
One thing is that we're very surprised how quickly the students learn. It seems to be a very effective teaching tool for the students. They've been learning a lot about programming, and so some of the students have been developing these apps for the platform, and they're really considering the important issues like what are the important uses of energy, when do we need to have power for certain things, what are the critical uses, and so we think it's a very effective teaching tool for energy and for programming, for this synthesis of these two fields that we've been seeing a lack of in the field, and the students are very enthusiastic about this also. So we had a few of the students who we worked with in India installing the system. They were able to come to Madison in January for a little workshop, and so we worked a lot with them. And now they're back in India, and they just finished building one of their own boxes.
Oh, wow. That's exciting.
They were very enthusiastic to get back and put into practice everything that they learned here. And so they worked really hard and got the box all put together.
That's very exciting. And I assume that there must be some kind of grant or institutional support for this research and the project of actually building these. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, this project is being supported by the NSF grant, which is the Partner for Innovation Accelerating Innovative Research. So that grant has enabled us to develop the technology. We also have a grant from the Baldwin Wisconsin IDEA, which promotes this kind of partnership with institutions in India, and that has helped us travel to India, spend a couple of weeks, maybe a month there to set up the system and see what happens when you deploy the systems in the real world.
So it's such an exciting and innovative opportunity to really get just regular people involved in thinking about how the grid works and managing their own microsystems. So sounds like you have some opportunities for folks to get involved that are coming right up, right? I think you have a hackathon coming up in April.
Yep. So April 13th is going to be we are organizing EnerHack, which is UW Madison's first energy hackathon.
First energy hackathon.
It's pretty
That's
exciting.
Historic. It's great. Where is it? And who should come to the hackathon? What type of individuals are you interested in having participate?
So it's on the UW campus. It's at the UW Makerspace, which is a really cool new space that's just been introduced at Wendt Library on the UW campus. It's right next to Union South, and we're very impressed by the facility, and the Makerspace staff has been really helpful to us to get this off the ground. There's a lot of cool equipment at the Makerspace. So the hackathon is open to participants who are UW-Madison students, but anyone can come and check it out. We're also looking for volunteers if there are people who are interested in just being a part of the hackathon without competing. But anyone can come and see the cool projects that we're working on. We have a lot of different topics and a lot of students who are interested in taking these topics on, from smart homes to Internet of Things to machine learning and optimization, and some of the really cool developments that are going on in power systems today. These are all topics that we'll see at the hackathon.
Is there a website for the hackathon?
Yeah, there is. It's enerhack.com, enerhack.com.
Great. So for all of our listeners, excuse me. So for all of our listeners who are science aficionados, you might want to check out the EnerHack and see if you can be supportive and learn about what these students are doing. Can you tell us what types of students you expect to attend the hackathon? Because I know you're looking at people from various disciplines and departments.
So this is a challenge-based hackathon, and what we're trying to do is get students from different domains. So the challenges are in Internet of Things, smart homes, and they go all the way to security and e-commerce. Even there are a couple of challenges on education, curriculum development, and consumer science. So we're hoping to see students from all these domains, all centered around energy.
That's great. That's great. Well, we wish you luck for the hackathon. I'm definitely going to check it out at Wendt Library.
So when you have a hackathon event like this, is there some compilation of what everybody learns during the course of that so that we can find out more about the kinds of projects that people actually develop during these challenges?
Yeah, we're hoping to have videos and photos and hopefully some write-up on what the students have done. And if there are live demos, we can even record it and put it up online.
The whole idea of this is that it's a big learning experience for us and for the whole community, that we've never done anything like this before, and to our knowledge, nothing like this has been done in Madison. So we're excited to see what the students come up with and what we can all learn from it.
That's great. Thank you. So what's next for you and your box?
So with Energion, we are looking at promoting energy education. So we're doing this through the hackathon where students will work with the hardware platform. But we're also looking at partnering up with universities and schools, talking to educators to see if they would be interested in teaching something like this. And this is a very hands-on kind of a workshop or a course. So right now we are focusing on building relationships and also seeing where we can pilot this. So some of the next steps would be to see if we can, our advisor, Professor Giri, who leads this project, is thinking about teaching a class at UW using this platform. So we want to expand and get more universities and schools and technical colleges on board with this idea.
We can do a MOOC someday.
Definitely.
Awesome. Well, thank you very much for being with us today. We at the Wisconsin Energy Broadcast are excited about up-and-coming research like yours that will really help engage more people in thinking about how electricity works and energy works and how we can shape our own future. So thanks for being with us.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
It's really been exciting.
Great. And we'll see you at the hackathon. And now we'd like to go to a little bit of news about vehicle emissions standards. What seemed like an April Fool's joke on April 2nd, EPA Administrator Scott Pruitt announced that greenhouse gas emission standards for cars and light trucks for model years 2022 through 2025 that had been set by the Obama administration just in the twilight of their last few days in office are not appropriate, that they didn't comport with reality, and that they set the standards too high. Those last few phrases are a quote from the EPA. So a little background. These fuel standards have been sort of governing how automakers set fuel economy for vehicles for many decades now. And there is an ongoing, long-standing effort to develop this policy with the EPA, the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration, and then the California Air Resources Board, which has been deeply involved in the policy development. The Natural Resource Defense Council argues that the national and state clean car standards demonstrate major benefits for the economy. Luke Tonichel, director of the Clean Vehicles and Fuels Project at NRDC, points out in his blog that successful clean car standards have already reduced 230 million tons of climate-changing emissions and saved consumers more than $49 billion at the pump. In addition, NRDC recently commissioned a study with the Union of Concerned Scientists and the American Council for an Energy Efficient Economy. That study came out just at the end of March, and it's from Synapse Energy and Economics.
they took a look at the emissions standards and quantified the economic impact of the standards. They found that U.S. households would save nearly $40 billion in gasoline fuel annually by 2025 with the standards. That as households reinvest those fuel savings back into the broader economy, the standards will create more than 100,000 additional jobs in 2025. That employment in auto and component manufacturing will also get a strong boost as consumers invest in more fuel-efficient technologies for vehicles. And that overall, U.S. gross domestic product would see an increase of more than $13 billion in 2025. So those are the economic arguments for these standards. If you want a deeper dive, I'd encourage you to check out today's Energy Gang podcast. You can find them at greentechmedia.com. One of their hosts, Jigar Shah, really dug into whether or not these standards, also called corporate average fuel economy standards or CAFE standards, have really been beneficial in reducing emissions or improving miles per gallon. And he states that in 1989, the achieved fuel economy, which is different from the standard, was 19.5 miles per gallon. And in 2015, we only made it all the way up to 21.6 miles per gallon. So that's an improvement of 1.5 miles per gallon, or overall, that's what we're looking at our, as our achieved fuel economy across the board. So he's arguing that rather than spending the energy on working on these complicated CAFE standards, in which there have been a number of loopholes written into the regulations that allow for very slow progress, that we should be focusing on things like electrifying the vehicle fleets. So I'd encourage you to check that out. And also, I'd just like to read a quote here from Governor of California, Jerry Brown, who called the EPA's decision a cynical and meretricious abuse of power that will jeopardize the health of all Americans. So California is not taking this lying down. The 13 other states that have higher standards under the Clean Air Act are not taking this lying down. There's probably going to be a number of lawsuits immediately in response to these proposed rule changes. So there's also going to be a public comment period, and that will be available through the EPA's website. So stay tuned for opportunities to share your comments with the government. And that's it for our show tonight. Thank you for being a part of the Wisconsin Energy broadcast and for listening. You can find us on the WART website at wartfm.org, and we will be on iTunes very soon with our own channel. So when you're updating your podcast, look for us there in the coming month. Thank you to my co-host Nan Fay, to our guests Ashray and David from the University of Wisconsin. Check them out at energyon.net. So that's ENERGYAN.net. Learn more about their hackathon that's coming right up, and see if you need a grid in a box. All right. Have a great night. Thank you.